Welcome to episode 2, season 2 of The Badge and Beyond. Everybody knows my esteemed colleague here, Danny.
Hello.
Guys, today, a little bit of fun for...
Hi, Danny.
Thanks. Thanks, Danny. And just to relieve the tension, we've been in the room for a while now, so we've already said hi. So that's a fake hi. Yeah. Don't worry. Yeah. Guys, today we're going to talk about leadership. Both Danny and I, having been in leadership positions... there's probably a lot to be said for a lack of leadership in New South Wales Police Force. I think for anybody that's aspiring to be a leader, I'd like to tell some of the harsh truths we learn.
Yeah.
And also, I kind of want people to have an understanding of the difficulties and the things that you learn usually through mistakes or through misguided trust as a leader. So with that having been said, let's dive into it. Of course, as always, we're talking about policing issues. So there's always the potential for some kind of triggering issue to be raised. So please, if this is something that might trigger you, feel free to reconsider your options and also touch base with any of your support networks around, and if you need help with that, probably speaking to your local GP is probably the first place to go. Danny.
Yeah.
You're a sergeant. You're a sergeant for a long time. Actually, we met as sergeants working together. What is probably one of your... Give me one of your best or worst incidents as a leader where you've either completely nailed it or completely fudged it.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Look, I think what's funny is the way that the police structure is, sometimes when you do your greatest leadership moves, it's nothing to do with the title that you've got.
Yes.
And, you know, there's... like an unwritten rule about how many years you're in, it sort of puts you up that you're like to be respected a bit more because you've done more time. And we play what they call the registered numbers game, you know. Yes. So each police officer is given a registered number.
What people often call a badge number, which doesn't exist, but it's just your number.
Yeah, which you got allocated at the uni, at the academy.
Yeah.
And so basically the lower your number is, the longer you've been in, the more old school or veteran sort of that you are, right? So, you know, you'd play the registered numbers game. For example, when somebody had to, you know, take turns in something, or, you know, the next in line, if your supervisor's off, who's the next in line to act as a supervisor? And I remember, you know, it was something in general duties I really looked forward to team leading, and especially what they call the field commander or leading the crew on the road. And when you're a constable or a senior constable, and you know your sergeant's called in sick or whatever, and you're next cab off the rank, it's a nice little surprise because, number one, it's because you're probably not going to do much paperwork because the crews will do all the jobs, and you get to have a little bit of fun and you get to drive around by yourself and you don't have someone to annoying you or someone you're responsible for, so that it can be quite good, but it also can come with a crap load of responsibility if it's a terrible shift. And then you're just in everything.
Yeah. Right?
You know, there's crime scenes you've got to be wary of. You're updating the inspector on everything. And if your inspector isn't the most in-touch person in the world, then you're actually doing everything.
Yes.
Right? And I was definitely a part of that many, many, many times. So
there's an example of poor leadership.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the worst one is the one I think I have spoken about in terms of the inspector not releasing us to respond to that domestic. Yeah. That is still the worst bout of leadership I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
But I think the greatest leadership I saw was when it came to the really serious stuff, right? Mm. So, for example, when it was during the Cronulla riots, watching your inspectors or even the commander sort of get out onto the street and jump out in front of you and try to also ward off the angry people that were there, pacing themselves in the line of fire, so to speak. That kind of stuff really sort of resonates with you. And sometimes, you know, where I had been in situations, especially early in my career, where I'd seen police officers lock themselves in the car and not come out.
I haven't seen it, but I've heard about it a number of times. It's a disgusting practice. And if you ever do that and you leave your partner out to dry, put your resignation in the next
day. As someone who was the victim of it in early in my career, I can definitely know, attest to how terrible that is. I think the concept of leadership and management get intertwined too much. And unfortunately, from what I experienced in my time, very few of my managers I'd ever consider leaders.
Yes.
Yeah. And when you're only exposed to the police when it comes to leadership, you probably come out with a very different view of what leadership actually is. I was very fortunate and still unfortunate to have held and hold leadership positions outside, in the community sector, in the corporate sector, and sort of different spheres. And when I was able to, you know, manage teams and manage processes my way, you learn the burden of responsibility and what it means. And also, we had this issue in the police where you need to treat people like children for some reason to get discipline. And I found that very weak leadership, whereby everything was about a negative consequence.
Yeah.
All right. So, usually, and like 90%, to be honest, in policing, you would do something because you were worried about a complaint. Right, you're right about this inspector will probably then give you this duty or that duty, or the boss will give you this or give you that if you don't comply, even when you didn't really agree with what he or she were doing. I found a lot of overcompensating in the senior ranks of the police, where I found them not to have much substance in what they were when they were making a certain call, and so they'd just be aggressive about it, and just show that insecurity. But it wasn't until I sort of moved up the ranks and spent more time there. I remember even approaching one of the inspectors and saying to him, "Hey, I just want to apologize. I was not the greatest subordinate to you sometimes.
Yes.
But I'm now having the chance to occupy those kind of positions and leading my own teams. I've seen why, you know, you made certain calls that you made. Not that I agreed with them, but I could understand them.
Yeah.
Right. And that was always an issue too, because realistically, what extra training are you getting?
Yeah, look, in later times, they introduced this, you know, leadership, you know, kind of things for sergeants and inspectors transition course and things. But I come back to your point about it. Manager isn't always a good leader, and a leader isn't always a good manager. And look, the reason we are doing this today in some respects is recently they've got the optional disengagement scheme, or the ODS for the police. And it's the type of thing where you receive a payout to leave the police force. Now, for 240 positions in this, approximately 900 people applied. For an organisation, and this is the third one that they've done, and it's always been oversubscribed, for an organisation that only has, I think, around 16,000 sworn, maybe a lot less than that now, because the actual number of people versus the positions they could have differs.
Yeah.
So that's the reason. I think I had both some amazing... I'm very grateful. Honestly, I'm grateful for both really good leaders that I got to model and some really piss-poor leaders because they taught me what I didn't want to do.
Yep.
But I made mistakes as a leader. And I assumed people looked through the same lens that I did and would see things in the same way. And that wasn't the case. But from a point of basics to good leadership, look, check on your team. Lead by example. Don't ever ask anybody to do something you wouldn't do yourself. And get out there and do what you're asking them to do. Lead from the front.
Yep.
So I had a belief that if a crap situation's going down, if I can get there, I'll be the first one in, the last one out. I'm the guy on the ground generally with the most experience once you're in a leadership position. So you are the person best able to manage that situation, lead through it, and model what needs to be done for people. When I first started out at CAMPSI, when I had my first team, I would go around before the end of... at the end of each shift, speak to every car crew,
yep.
even though it was time for me to go home because we started, the sergeants started earlier than the constables. What have you got on? Do you need a hand with anything? Do you need overtime? Is there anything I can help with? I remember, like, the end of, like, 3-4 weeks, one of the guys said, he goes, Sarge, are you going to do this every shift? I'm like, yeah, why? What's the problem? He's like, no one else does this. I'm like, okay, well, that's how I do it, right? And I got a lot of respect for that. There's a name for the person in the cops that is in a leadership position, and I saw it numerous times, and never leaves the station. It's big amongst inspectors, the duty officers. Some sergeants have a good reputation for it, and that they used to call them the eternal flame because they never go out. I had a sergeant come in. I was working on my team at Campsie. She came in, got there early so she could roster herself inside or in custody or working on as mobile supervisor.
Looking after
looking after all the... And I hated doing custody, same as you, because I like to be out on the road leading and having fun and, you know, doing all the tactical kind of stuff.
Mm.
She got there like 2 hours early so she could get herself and choose the position. And because she'd been a sergeant longer than me, put me in custody.
Yeah.
She didn't. She went out once all night to go to get coffee.
Yeah.
And I was like, if you were going to do that, you could have just done that from custody.
Yeah.
Like, and troops need leadership.
Yeah.
They want, they're really looking for it. But also, if you're going to go out there and someone's going to go toe-to-toe, you've got to lead them into that battle.
Yep.
You know what I mean? You've got to, or you, how do you know the capability of your troops? It's kind of like kids, really. Mm-hmm. I often thought of my team is like my own little extended family because I want to watch them grow and develop and I want to know what they can handle and what I can give them, but where they're lacking so we can help bolster them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember one of the, you know, I was going to say few and far between great advice I got from the commander. He said to me when I took my sergeant's job, he said, you're going to be bored because of what you were doing before. Because what you were doing, very specialist, you know, I was in the more exciting phase of policing. And he said, but you will enjoy mentoring and developing your team. And it was the only part of policing in that stage of my career that I actually did enjoy. And that's the difference. And I remember having an early conversation after about maybe 6 months in, and one of the other sergeants threw a comment at me, just on my team. And he said, oh, they never come to me with stuff. They always come to you. And kind of like I should be upset about it.
Yeah.
Right? So then I took offense to it, me being me. And I said to him, okay, so I grabbed the roster. And I went through each team member of my team. And I said, what's her husband's name? He said, I don't know. What's the pet dog's name of this cop? And he couldn't answer anything.
Yeah, know your people.
Yeah, and I said to him, that's why they come to me. Not because I got some great bastion of whatever, of sage wisdom.
Yeah.
It's because I'm actually invested. And I think if you're going to be, especially if you're a sergeant, if you're going to be a team leader, because that's your team, right?
Yeah.
Then if you're not invested in your troops, then what the hell are you doing it for? And it's really demotivating. I remember coming in when I was, you know, when I was a constable or a senior constable, when my supervisor was not interested and you didn't want to knock on the door and ask for anything because you knew you were going to just get scoffed at or you're just an inconvenience.
Yeah.
Right? They'd see you as an inconvenience. But whenever they need something done, you know, they'll come here, can you go do this for me? And you're like the little errand boy for them, then it's okay.
Yeah.
And then you had those that had their favorites and their little cliques and all that kind of stuff. And again, that's poor leadership.
Yeah.
So if you're going to start to have cliques and you're going to divide the team, then that's poor leadership. The thing is this. Leadership strategy can very much include you making bad, seemingly bad decisions because you're actually managing your problems out, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So sometimes we have to play the role of appearing to be the incompetent leader or the bad leader, but because you want certain people to leave, right? Mm-hmm. And you know that you'll create an environment where they're not going to be, you know, enjoying themselves, and it's like the managing out process. The corporate does it a lot more ruthless.
Yeah.
But there is a strategy in that, for an example, especially now because everyone's worried about HR and all that kind of stuff. So it's a lot easier if the person leaves themselves as opposed to you firing them. Now, in the cops, it used to be like, good luck trying to get rid of someone. Yeah. And the way they would get rid of problems was usually to transfer them, or give them a much better position than they were in before.
That's right. Reward the incompetence or
and
the
poor performance. Your really good cops would just sit there and burn like, why am I trying to achieve here?
Yeah.
What's the point of getting all these amazing statistics and figures and accomplishing all this stuff where, you know, the incompetence is more rewarded and they get to have a break and, you know, sit in this office and watch Netflix all day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting you raise that point about being, you know, people choosing who they go to. I remember the sergeant's office in camps. There's two desks. Constables would walk into the sergeant's office and you had a desk on the left and one right in front. And one day I'm sitting with one of the other team sergeants and I'm on the desk on the left and there's the other sergeant with me on the... And he was quite a nice guy, quite a knowledgeable guy, but he had a reputation amongst the constables for just being like blowing up and doing whatever. And this constable comes in and he looks at him, he looks at me, he looks away from him and comes to me. And then I deal with the problem. I walk out and I looked up at him and he had a wry little smile on his face. I know what you're doing. He's like, what? I said, you're a jerk to these guys so that they don't hassle you with questions. You get out on time. You don't have to deal with anything. He's like,
yep. He nodded.
Just nodded and smiled. I'm like, but that's not who I wanted to be. No. And you know, I had a sergeant that I loved to hate. When I was in GDs, he was one of the reasons I left GDs early, outside of being headhunted for positions. It was, you know, it's always your choice, but like, if I can get away from that guy, I'm out.
Yeah.
Like, and blow my own horn, but I had more stats than everybody in the station.
Yeah.
Right. And it wasn't because no one was as good as me. I was just the same as everybody else, but I was coming on my day off to do paperwork.
Yeah.
Right. If I was on the road, I was on the road.
Yep.
You didn't see me. My day's off. I had nothing to do, so I'd come in on my own time.
Yep.
But when you're doing the maximum number of charges possible and doing all this and just picking up jobs and intels and doing whatever else, the brief work builds up.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, this sergeant was just, he was never supportive, like, you're doing a great job. I know, what can I do to help you? He was just up me for the rent. Your paperwork's not being done. You're not doing this. You're not doing that. Like, yeah, but you see that I'm doing more than everybody else, right? And other people are sitting off jobs and I'm copying those jobs and then it's snowballing. And he just never gave me, like, never said a civil word to me. And it was always gruff and crap.
Yep.
And I'm like, I know my work is making you look good as a team leader.
Yep.
So then when I exited, someone said to me, I was like, oh, the sarge was really upset you left. I'm like, how is that possible? The guy hates me. They're like, no. He said to us, you're doing the work of three people, so everybody had to step up now.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know what? He never told me.
Yeah, poor leadership.
Never said a single word.
How much would that have changed for you?
Yeah. And that's, you know, I probably would have done a lot more time underneath that guy, but he was just a jerk.
Yeah.
I think one of my big leadership mistakes was, and I say this for, and leadership is something that transcends the cops. It's across frontline emergency services. It's in corporate. It's everywhere. It's just sometimes I think the opportunities to lead are a lot more obvious, although just as frequently missed in the cops. One of my issues as a leader was when I first started out, I tried to be nice to everybody and people assumed I was their friend. Now, because I, like you, I knew who their wife was and what their kids' names were and what was going on in their life, so I could help manage their workload for them and manage different characteristics of other people and whatever else. The minute something doesn't go someone's way, they turn on you.
Yeah.
And I even had someone say, you pretend like you're everybody's friend, but you're not. And I was like, no, I don't talk to you outside of work. I don't ring you on my days off. I'm the guy that's supposed to look after you when you're here.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And that was a really big mistake for me because... when you've got someone that doesn't like you, it's very easy for them to try to turn all your hard work against you, you know. And also, you know, that was really disappointing because as I moved on through the ranks, I was one of the few inspectors that it was out on the road all the time. If there was a door to be kicked in, I was at the front of that. If there was a stink on, I was in it. you know, I felt like that was important. Didn't make me the best cop, didn't make me the best leader, but I was trying to do the right things. But then the number of times I got backstabbed by people because they didn't know the full story.
Yeah.
And the number of times when people that I thought were, I had a good connection with, turned on me because they had a half a story, or they just listened to some other gimp that was taking on the concept of TJF. Do you want to explain what TJF is, Danny?
TJF, the job is effed.
Yes, that's right. TJF is a syndrome usually caught by senior constables in uniform. Not all of them, mind you, don't get me wrong, I'm not painting everybody with that brush, but usually you'll hear it out of either sergeants that aren't going anywhere, or I dare I say a barred up senior constable, which means they've don't have the leading senior constable rank with the two bars over their two chevrons. They've been doing uniform for over 10 years and they've got their little bar and they're kind of like not going anywhere because they'd have to perform but don't know what to do and hate doing what they're doing.
Yep.
But those people can be really toxic, and you know, the times when I thought that constables would back me or, you know, support me when other people spoke badly, it just never happened.
Yep.
And that creates for some, for your leaders out there, they start to have this, there's an us and them mentality that often builds up between the rank and file and the leaders, and that gets played upon by the political animals. And then just as we talk about police and the wider community, there becomes this widening gap between management and the rank and file. But even when someone tries to bridge that gap, they still treat you like that. For example, people will talk about, there's another term you would have heard about, the needle. Yeah, then for those people unfamiliar, the needle is when they say you get to inspector rank, you've become a commissioned officer, so you got the needle basically to become a PRICK.
Yeah.
And that changes people. But even when you're not that guy and you do everything well, and I've seen multiple people that were really good guys really fighting for the troops, in all those meetings behind closed doors, people are still like, oh, he's had the needle. Yeah, they only had to do one thing that someone didn't like, and, oh, he's had the needle, he's a jerk.
But that's the other side of leadership, right? Sometimes you're going to be, or many times, you will take the role of the bad guy because it's for the greater good.
Yep.
Right? And so you will lose some popularity, and people will think, you know, cast aspersions on your character and who you are, but not understanding you did it for the greater good.
Yeah.
And that they don't know all the answers, and they don't know the other side of the story. And a lot of that would happen within the, especially the police complaints side of the equation, mm-hmm. when certain information's gone through and the cops aren't aware that they were listening on, or, you know, there were things that had happened and I had no idea that, you know, all the facts were there, but they wanted you not to get, so, you know, they didn't want a punishment so severe for you that they sort of disrupted where you were, the trajectory you were going on.
Yeah.
You know, they've moved you to another team, they've moved you to another unit, because if you stayed where you were, you're probably going to end up in a lot of trouble.
And that's the thing, sometimes...
And you can never tell.
No, you can't tell. Like, I remember people be like, oh... Like, different examples. For you, you have those people and you're like, you buried yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I came to you with a complaint. If you just had told the truth, we could have managed it. And the evidence was in hand.
Yeah.
But you lied about it, so then the hands were tied
of
the supervisor or inspector or whoever, and they had to go down that path because they didn't have another choice to try to save you from yourself in when something you did wrong, whereas if you admitted you made the mistake, it could be sorted. You know, there's so many things like that. I had another point where a person was really quite ill, but they were still, you know, fully, you know, on full duties, but they weren't picking up jobs and they were like, you know, just not performing very well. And people like, oh, that guy's a lazy bastard, that guy or girl, you know, they're this or that. They're like, why don't you do something about it? I'm like, I know that guy's got cancer.
Yeah.
Right? And they're really struggling, but they can't afford to take time off. They don't have all that. But also that person doesn't want everybody to know.
Yeah.
So I can't tell you.
Yeah.
So you're telling me I'm a bad leader because I'm not managing that person. That person's struggling with massive personal issues, and it could be cancer, it could be other people have issues with wife and family, husband, you know, kids, whatever.
Yep.
Everybody's got their own cross to bear, but people just assume because they have no knowledge about it that you're doing the wrong thing and somehow you're in cahoots with them. And it's got nothing to do with that. And it's really disappointing when you see that. Really disappointing. And honestly, there were some... I've worked with some great people who I lost a lot of respect for because they didn't have the presence of mind, sometimes even just to come and have a conversation on the side.
Yeah, but that's the thing, right? At the end of the day, it's easier to talk about you behind your back with six or seven other people and to actually have that conversation. I think that's what became the part of the maturity process, I believe, as you move up, is that you start to have those difficult conversations and just acknowledge. Yep. And I remember having it with I had a very... very colourful crime manager at one point in time. So effectively the second in charge of the police station, right? He was a detective chief inspector. And I was, I think, a senior constable at the time. And he was always on my case.
Yeah.
Not a fan of me for whatever reason. Doesn't take much. And I was leading the domestic violence unit at the time. And my role was starting to encompass a lot more things in the crime management unit. So I was looking after the youth officers, the crime prevention officers. I had a child protection team from docs on the side. So there was had a lot around me happening, and I was really busy, really, really busy in the role that I had. But I was also proactive. Like, I'd do lectures on it. I'd do whatever I could, and I was doing outside of police training in domestic and family violence to keep up my sort of development, because heaven forbid the police do that for you. It was like they were doing me a favor by allowing me to learn, right? And they'll let you know about it, right? Anyway, this inspector was just making life extremely difficult. And he just, for whatever reason, just wouldn't quit. And then me and him were both presenting at the same event. It's quite funny. So because it was a domestic violence themed event, I had to be there, right? And I was one of the keynote speakers. And I don't know why he was there, but he was there.
Just flying flags for the command.
He got to speak. And I'll give it to him. He was a good talker. It's the first time I've seen him present publicly, and he did quite well. And against every fiber of my being, I walked over to him in the car park, and he thought that I was going to just, give him a problem. And I just said, "Sir, I just want to say, you're a really good public speaker." And his demeanor changed entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, "Oh, really?" He goes, "Look, when we get back, come to the office." I'm like,
all right. You're like, what have I done now? Uh-oh.
So I go to the office and I sit down. And he goes, "Did you know that I lecture at university?" And I went, "No, I didn't." And he goes, "Oh, yeah, I lecture at the University of Western Sydney, and this is what I do." Now, I had been brought in as a guest lecturer at University of Western Sydney at the time. I just started. It was my first or second lecture there. I didn't know how tight he was with the faculty.
Yeah.
And then he said to me, he goes, "They've said some really great things about you, about this, this, this." And he goes, "You know, McCarty, I don't know why we don't get along. There seems to be a bit of a communication issue." And I'm looking, I'm like, "Are you serious? Like, you've been ripping me for the past year."
Yeah.
And I said to him, "Well, I hope that changes, because I feel like under your mentorship, I could do a lot better in my role." And that changed everything.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, opportunities were coming my way and things worked. And then you're like, learning how to manage up is also an important lesson in leadership, and not just about how you treat those beyond you, because then you become the buffer to difficult management in senior positions as well. Because otherwise, I couldn't advocate for my troops with this guy because he hated my guts.
That's right.
I was going to achieve nothing. So sometimes you got to bite the bullet and just try to work out, okay, this person's personality is like this. If you stroke his ego, then he'll be nicer to you.
Yeah.
It'd be hilarious if he's listening, because he'll know exactly I'm talking about him. But sorry, mate, that's the truth. You're a terrible leader. And that's the problem in these positions. They get to such high, and I think the high rank means you are a leader.
Yeah,
usually your higher rank in certain those positions means you were part of the right group, you've done a lot of years, right? And sometimes people don't want to be around you, all right? And you had that path because it was really old school. We're talking this person had a lot of years under their belt. Whereas, in many areas of outside the police force, you would not get away with that crap.
No.
Right? And now with the world of, everything's a complaint and I got trauma and I've got all these issues... Mate, good luck.
You know what's missing for leadership for mine, though, is there's two big things that miss in leadership. And one is accountability.
Mm.
And second of all is one of the first things I got told, even as a detective, senior constable acting as a detective sergeant, was praise in public, punish in private.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know what? I see lots of people missing that.
Yeah.
Never denigrate someone for a mistake in public.
Yep.
Pull them inside because you don't want them to lose face.
Yep.
And I had one time where that actually worked. I'll explain that. But the other one is, if your team made a mistake, that's your mistake.
Yeah.
And don't hide from it. And you know, there's that saying, there's no poor students, just poor teachers.
Yeah.
There's no bad staff, just bad managers. Freaking own it.
Yeah.
And get in there and fix that problem. Acknowledge it. What I see is a lot of scapegoating. And I think there's a lot of cops that are kind of feel like they have no faith in management and leadership. They're not being let out on the street. And there's nothing that they feel like, the money's just not there. The public desire and, you know, belief in cops is not there anymore. And if your leadership isn't backing you, when you're putting your, you're exposing yourself every day,
yep,
you don't want to be there.
Yep.
I mean, we don't normally mention names, but the current assistant commissioner in charge of the metro area, Tony Cook,
yep,
I was in anti-theft and he was a DO at Campsie.
Duty officer.
Duty officer, yeah.
Yep.
And I remember, so I'm just like a two-year constable cruising around plain clothes. They got like a bunch of guys for armed robbery. And we've turned up and just helping, like, you know, search them, do all the rest of this stuff. And they're like, oh, we're all out of cage trucks. We need to convey these guys. All of a sudden, Campsie 10, yeah, copy that. I'll go back, grab one of the cage trucks from the station. I'll be down there in 15 minutes. And everybody, I mean, we didn't work with Campsie that much. I mean, my partner, like, the duty officers bring down a cage truck? They're like, yeah. That's Cookie. He's just a great guy.
Yeah.
And he was that guy. Just jump in a cage truck, bring it down. It wasn't like he swapped out of the cage truck when he got there. He drove them back. He put them in the back. Was a complete part of it. There's nothing better as a constable than hearing, say, Campsie 1, which is like your superintendent.
Yeah,
I'll respond to that job. I'll come out.
Yeah.
Because the superintendent doesn't have to. There's no need for them to. But you know that they, if they're coming out to that job, they're at least getting their hands dirty.
Yep.
They're experiencing what's happening on the street.
Yep.
Mr. Cook was also my boss at Metropolitan Robbery Unit, and I don't have any constant contact with him. I think he probably wouldn't even remember me if he saw me in the street.
He's a bit busy now.
yeah, but, you know, again, we were running a job for a series of armed robberies. He had a company car because of his position, so he's got an unmarked car, and he's like, well, if you need obs on a Saturday or a Sunday, I'll just do a drive-by. I'm like...
As in observation.
Observation, yeah. I'm like, boss, it's weekend, you know, we can roster someone or whatever else. He said, yeah, that can be hard to get, and you guys need your Sunday. I said, don't worry about it. I said, do you get paid overtime? He's like, I don't get paid overtime in my rank, but,
yeah,
you know, I'll just go for a drive.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know what, that's a guy that is, yes, there. He's trying to make your life easier. I really appreciated that.
Yeah.
I had one individual whilst I was running a proactive crime team, and she wasn't performing. And the worst thing about her non-performance is she was poisoning a lot of the team, you know, just with her maligning and complaining.
Yeah.
And so I brought her in and I said, look, has to stop. Whatever your problems are, lay it out here. Let's clear the slate. Let's go. And look, the previous leader there had been terrible. You know, like, we're talking about not giving people their roster before 2 days out, you know.
Oh.
So, and, you know, when is they're supposed to get a six-week roster.
Yeah.
So it was one of the first things I changed. But this young lady was very unhappy with things. And so I gave the opportunity, and I think 2 or 4 weeks later, I still kept getting, and it was all over the place. I mean, it was from the other staff, it was from the supervisors, it was uniform staff and team leaders telling me, oh my goodness. And I've not long been in this role, so I bring her in and I'm like, it's still going on. I'm sorry, you're gone.
Yep.
I have to let you go. You're going back to uniform. But I don't want you to lose face. So we're just going to say that uniform needed, we couldn't have a number of people here, and you volunteered to go back to uniform.
Yep.
Do you think she took that?
No.
No,
of course not.
She went back and told everybody that I was a jerk because I tried to lie and do this. And I was really just trying to help her save face because she wasn't good at what she was doing. She wasn't happy. And I didn't want her to lose face in front of the crew.
Yep.
The stupidity of it was in trying to do that and her trying to undercut me. Everybody else actually saw what I was trying to do, so they appreciated that. So that worked in my favor. But again, you have to go to those links where, and sometimes you have to understand people will not, as a leader, you want them to understand things from your side, but they just, so often they won't.
Yeah, and I think the problem then becomes with, especially now with this sort of mass exodus from the police,
mm-hmm.
And people trying to now, cops trying to find their role out of policing. You know, something you and I get a lot in terms of, you know, contacting us, whether it's at yeah. Precision or at a security company or whatever. We get, there's a real problem if they haven't experienced leadership outside policing.
Yes.
And we've seen a lot of sort of clients that we know uh-huh. that we do work for who have had ex-cops in roles
yep.
and haven't had great feedback, especially if they've given them very senior managerial uh-huh. roles and they haven't managed the teams quite well, and there's been a lot of complaints
mm.
because police are used to being treated a certain way, so they think when you're the boss, that's how you treat people as well, yes. right?
Yeah.
And I think that's a, it's going to be one of the sort of contrasts they're going to find coming out. You know, all of a sudden you're leading an investigation team for Woolies, for example, on double the money you were on as a cop, yeah. but you'll last 3 months because of the way you treat your staff.
Exactly right. And you know, the funny thing is, and for the people out there listening, I would say we generally have at least one police officer a week come into the office and sit down with Danny or I, just asking about where to next. What do we do when we leave the police? What are our options? Because they don't know where to go and what to do and how they can translate their skills. And, you know, when we look at that, so many of them, when I ask them why they're leaving, it's so much to do with oftentimes the culture and the leadership culture. It's about superintendents not knowing their staff, not talking to their staff.
Yeah.
You know, inspectors following the lead of the superintendent and not showing the staff they give a damn, you know? And it's like, it's kind of like you're just a number. It really has gotten to a point where they feel like they're a number and no one cares and they're yep. not going to be supported.
Yep.
And, you know, people are saying a lot of bad things about Karen Webb. I've never worked under her. I don't know the lady.
Same.
But the rumours, if you believe that the culture can be changed from the top, then it's got to start from there. But that's got to flush down to the superintendent level and the inspector level so that everybody is pushing the same values and is supporting the rank and file. Because, look, these people, police need that support. We're in a point in time where I've never seen the morale so bad mm. or heard of it being so bad and mm. seeing such numbers leave. And the community can't afford that.
No. And look, I think it goes back to my point about managing up. You can't hold one cop responsible for the morale of the police force.
No,
right?
No.
Let's say Karen was outstanding.
Yes.
Right? Let's say she's the best person for the job, bar none. If the next level under her are rubbish, you're going to deal with rubbish.
Absolutely.
Right?
But so, again, that's a leadership thing for that level,
exactly
right?
Every
level above has to manage their people underneath, but
yeah.
show the expectation. And look, everybody looks at the CEO of an organization, which is really what the commissioner is, the CEO when you look at it from a corporate structure.
Yep.
But they've got to set the tone for the culture, and the actions have to meet the words,
yep.
and it has to be demonstrable.
Yeah, and the thing is, they're assigned, like, you know, the deputies, the assistants, yes. they're all assigned portfolios, right? And at the end of the day, there's so much rank mm-hmm. in that structure, and it's a paramilitary organization in that space. So realistically, for that probationary constable that's driving around St. George, right, the commissioner's kind of irrelevant to that person.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Their world's going to change with their education officer. Their world's going to change with their field teaching mm-hmm. officer. You know, who their team leader is, that's their planet in which they operate. So if there are problems in leadership in that little group, that's mm-hmm. that's what's going to affect that person.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's just a lot of time for rumor mongering and deflated conversations. But
it's got to go both ways. And I think this is the point, right? Yeah. For those people in the rank and file, try to have the conversations with your leaders if you can find someone that's approachable and get an understanding of what they're dealing with. And as leaders, speak to the people beneath you and say, look, what are we not getting right, or what are your perceptions?
But that's the thing too. I think a key issue also when it comes to leadership in police is that we don't recognise the skills and talents of the people that are in the organisation because we base it on what their rank is.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine, for example, a deputy commissioner going to speak to two or three probationary constables who have a particular skill set and knowledge in certain fields that might be able to assist them with their strategic planning. Yep. It just will never happen.
No.
Right?
No.
They'll never be able to have the awareness of it. Again, that's not it. Even in construction, there is something called the skills register, right? So you know who's got what tickets and what qualifications on a construction site in your team. So for example, there's something particular that needs to happen. This person can actually drive a crane. This person can actually do this. This person is trained on a scaffold ticket. So if there's an issue, they'll come have a look at it, even though that's not their job.
Yep.
But they have the quals, right? I can never see that happening, you know, where I'm like, oh, I'm an inspector and I got this team, and then one of them's, for example, a locksmith, right? You would have to know this, right? And then have someone advocate for him that you would come and approach, hey, you're a locksmith, could you? And that's a problem. You don't have a way. This workforce of now, I think it's about 14,000 at the moment.
Yeah.
A workforce of 14,000. You can imagine there'll be some significant talent and experiences in that. Across that cohort, do we know and recognize what that is? And are they being used for strategic planning? And no.
And look, add to that, the influence of politics in management and leadership.
Yeah.
I think that's got a lot to do with how people treat their subordinates, because they're looking for how do they move up? What's going to be the issue that, you know, impacts their career trajectory?
Yeah.
And really, you can't have that front of mind when you're trying to lead people through a dangerous environment. But look, all the things we've been talking about here is exactly the same as what you'd find in the corporate world. You know, again, all those look for opportunities to lead, get out there, show people that as a manager or a leader, you have their same skill set.
Yeah.
Know your people, punish in private, praise in public. You know, just be kind to people. And look, the last thing I think I want to touch on is, when you ask someone to do something, especially early on in your leadership space or when you're new with someone, don't just tell them what you need done, tell them why you need it done.
Yep.
Especially with today's generation, no one's doing it under... If you want critical thinkers, you need to explain to them what you're trying to achieve.
That's a great point. And I think that's something else that was missed by a lot. Like, we would get there and they'd make the call and brief and do whatever. Very few would tell you why.
Yes. Yep.
You're going to be going here, you're going there. And in emergency or crisis situation, there's no time for that shit.
No.
Fine. That's not an issue. But in other things, you really want to unpack that.
Like, yes.
Why are we pursuing this guy on this angle, for example? And I think detectives would be different because you have a bit more time for those kind of conversations. And with the squad, it's a bit different. You're a bit closer. You know, you're all aware of that particular sort of task that you're on. Where in the general duty side, it's just like, sometimes you're working off team. You're there for that shift, and it's just like, yeah, whatever, right? I take it. One of the things, for example, I wanted to implement as a team leader was, you know, the little thing of always putting the person that's not on your team in the station.
Yeah.
Right? So basically, you know, if you were part of a busy police station and you didn't want to work at the front counter, right? It's usually you get smashed. There's heaps of work to do. It's all car accidents and crappy jobs that involve a lot of paperwork. You just increase your workload by working the front counter. And what usually would happen, the junior person would take it, or the person who's not part of your team.
Yeah.
Right? We'll throw it to them. Where I worked in teams where we decided we wouldn't do that. Right? We would so that people knew if they're working with us on our team, chances are you're not going to get the station. But unless you ask for it, you're not going to get the station because we don't implement this policy of like, it would seem like a punitive thing, right? Where we would have, okay, if everyone kind of pulls their weight and understands, you know, I understand it comes around, you've got to grow up and you've got to cut your teeth, you know, on these kind of things. But sometimes you've got seasoned or really good operators on other teams that are working with you for that period. Well, like, why should they get punished? What for? And then you'd be annoyed that when you're working on another team, and they smash you straight into the...
Yeah.
And again, that's poor leadership from the supervisors going, look at these guys. Look how well he or she works.
Mm.
These guys are good workers. Why would you put them in the pit, for example, right? Then your team suffers because you could have had a really good operator on the road. And that's the kind of stupid culture things we just accept, yep. right? Because that's how it's always been done.
But you know your point, I liked your point about when an incident is taking place, you don't unpack it. That's not the time to unpack it. You know, when you need to storm the beach, there's no point in telling people why we need to storm the beach. Just get up there and get it done, right? But the point is, if you've taken that time in the first place to explain why you have it, what your thought process is, why you think it's going to work, what the pros and cons are, and what you took into account, when you have those times when you need to say, get in there and attack that job, and this is how I want you to do it, people will have faith because they know that you've thought about those points. They've got a reason to believe that you were right before, or you've taken account of many different variables, and so you're thinking now, by all accounts, without time to explain it, we'll be on point. And that's an important point for those, particularly for frontline areas.
Yeah.
So I think we've tackled just about everything we wanted to in that. We could probably go on for days because the examples of poor leadership, and I don't remove myself from that at times. I know I've gotten it wrong.
Yeah.
And if there's comments on any of the podcasts or the YouTube videos, I've no doubt expect a couple of my former subordinates to tell me exactly where I screwed up. But look, I think that pretty much sums it up. I'd like to thank our sponsors, which is IC Technology. Where would they find IC Technology, Danny?
ictechnology.com.au for all things IT and cyber.
Fabulous. And our own company, Precision Integrity Services. Nearly forgot the name for a second. And you can find us at www.privateinvestigatorsydney.com.au.
See you next time.